This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. We are discussing, and we're still remaining very much on the topic of the 12 Malaysia plan, because about 50% of the total basic development expenditure will be channeled to states like Kedah, Kelantan, Perlis, Terengganu, Sabah and Sarawak. Now, these six less developed states, will benefit from the government's three priority areas, which are
optimizing regional economic development, developing sustainable cities and transforming rural areas to bridge the development gap. Now, to achieve this, there will be better collaboration and coordination between federal and state agencies in order for efficient implementation of these development projects. In terms of optimizing regional economic development, the target is for an average GDP growth of about 5.6% for the northern states, 6.5% for the eastern region, 6.4% for Sabah, and 5.3% for Sarawak. But the question is, will this all come to fruition over the next 5 years?
So to help us answer this question, we're speaking this morning to Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at ICIS Yusof Ishak Institute. Thanks for joining us this morning, Francis. What was your initial reaction to the 12 Malaysia plan in terms of addressing the development of those less developed states?
Thanks so much for having me. Well, as you put out very nicely just now, the plan does commit to a lot of very, very interesting things, focusing on the states that you've mentioned, optimizing regional economic potential and so forth. But I'd say in terms of a plan, it does have a big issue, and it's a defect that it shares with the 10th and the 11th Malaysia master plans. And that is that there is very, very little budget information. So if you go back to the first two Malaya plans and then onwards from the first Malaysia plan until the 9th, you had a lot of detailed budget information. You could see how much the government wanted to spend on economic development, on social development, even on things like security and defense. And then within economic development, you could see what they wanted to spend on agriculture and rural development or commerce and industry. And you also had, pertinent to our discussion, key information on development allocations by state. And then if you look at the population, then you have an idea of how much each state would receive. And then after 2 or 3 years, you have a midterm review, which actually asks questions like, you know, did you actually spend what you said you were going to spend? And what can we talk about the progress? But the 9th Malaysia plan is the last one that does this. And from the 10th Malaysia plan, the government gets very shy about what it spends across the different metrics. And also, you don't have statistics as to how much each state would get. So in this plan, you only have mentions to certain projects, which are quite small. And then you have relatively low-hanging fruit, such as the number of kilometers of road that can be built and so on. So it's actually, there are lots of good ideas, but it is quite hard to judge this plan against objective metrics.
Why is it so hard to be transparent about these targets and intentions?
I don't know. It's not that easy to be. It's not that hard to be transparent because, you know, certainly to make these plans, the government gets lots of information, and the development planning process is one that takes a long time. And then you've got, like, you know, feeding of information from state governments into the federal government to make these plans. So if I would like to make a pitch, not only should you talk about how much money you're going to spend in general, according to the categories, but also by state, but also it would be really good to get information on people. So you should be able to learn, you know, each government agency has this many people and this many are concentrated in Putrajaya or KL. And then these are sent out to different cities. So you'd be able to see not only flows of money, but also people. And what I have learned in my 20 years of looking at Malaysia is all your civil servants want to be stationed in Putrajaya and not out to the States because they see it's bad for their career. So you have lots of people in the center doing lots and lots of process, and you don't have enough people in the rest of the country.
Well, I mean, this is a very interesting point that you don't have the competent civil service to execute, which I think brings me to the question of the root cause of this imbalance in regional development in the first place. Do you think it's because state governments and state bodies are just not effective in implementing it?
Not so much. So actually, I'd say the first thing that we need to keep in mind is that all countries have internal disparities in wealth. And the roots of this disparity reflect the underlying availability of things like land, labor, and capital. But history and past decisions are fundamental. So if you go back to the pre-independence era in Peninsular Malaysia, you had three economic models. You had the Strait Settlements, which focused on entrepôt trade. You had the Federated Malay States, as well as Johor, that focused on commodities like tin and rubber. And then you had the four northern states that focused on rice production. Then later on, you have Sabah and Sarawak join, and they're also focused on commodities and timber. And because of these different economic structures, you have different levels of wealth. And then you also did have more investment during the pre-independence era in connecting the Strait Settlements and the Federated Malay States to world markets. The thing about these different economic structures is that once they're in place, they're very hard to change. And that's when you look at the relative position of states across history in Malaysia, they actually change relatively little. And this is not to say that Malaysia has not done a fantastic job of promoting rural development through rejuvenating rubber in the 1960s and 70s, as well as connecting different parts of the country. My point is just that reducing these disparities is very difficult. As for them to decrease significantly, you need to restructure the poorer ones. And at the same time, you kind of have to break the growth of the faster ones for the poorer ones to catch up. And lastly, on state governments, actually, they're not that influential. If you look, the federal government accounts for roughly 90% of all expenditure. And if you put all the state governments together collectively, they account for only about 10% of expenditure. So really, historically, it's been the federal government that does all the heavy lifting.
So then how can we improve at the end of the day? Because you have clearly highlighted that the reason why we're in the situation is because of history. But going forward, what needs to change actually so that these six states can actually improve?
Right. So certainly on one hand, what we've seen over the last 60 years since Malaysia became independent is that you've seen the federal government really absorbing and centralizing a lot of power and responsibility at the expense of the state governments. Through appropriating responsibilities, amending the constitution to make water a shared responsibility, duplicating things that state governments do, like supervising local governments, or even privatizing certain things that they do, like solid waste management. Now, if there's a little silver lining in the 12th Malaysia Plan, I would say is that state governments are talked about a lot more than they were in the past three plans, which really focused on the growth corridors. Now, the growth corridors, they're manned by really good quality professionals, but I would say using them is a bit problematic because you're dispensing money and resources via a mechanism that should be carried out by state governments. And if you have a regional corridor that's not performing very well, you can't really vote them out. The other thing I'd like to mention is rather than, listing things that the federal government thinks state governments should do, I would recommend an alternative approach, and that is to have the six states that you mentioned carry out their own development plans based on consultations with their state governments as well as the residents in their states to find out what they want to do. Then comes an intermediate step that is also very important, and that is you look at technology mapping to determine which parts of your economy are more technologically intensive, where you have things like skill gaps, and then where you have gaps in value chains, and then making perhaps two or three sectors per state. Then you really focus on them and you have specific commitments as to how much you're going to spend. You have KPIs, and then you really try and focus on that rather than kind of these general statements and kind of indicating to state governments what people think they should be doing.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at ISIS Yusof Ishak Institute, explaining why there is a development disparity between the six states and how to correct that. But I think, there's one point you said, Philip, about competent government servants. And I think it's not that we don't have them. We have plenty. Yep. It's just that they're perhaps not allocated in the right place, right? So they're all centralized in Putrajaya. But I think for sure, the 12th MP lacks one thing, and that's granular detail in terms of how we are going to achieve all these KPIs that the government has set out. And only if we do have the granular details can we actually know for sure whether these plans in the first place are even working out. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.